Okay.
Again, welcome to the Arizona State Hospital Independent Oversight Committee. And so far on the, as far as the committee members, it's myself, Chuck, Melissa K., Alice D., and Barb. I know Kim also was going to join, so she'll probably be joining shortly. But let's go ahead and begin to respect everyone's time. So welcome. Any disclosure of conflict of interest from any of the committee members? Okay, if in any discussions, anything comes up where there is a conflict of interest, you know, you have to disclose and then abstain from discussion and vote in that conversation and send Larry your signed document. Okay, last meeting review and approve of the minutes. They were sent out by Larry quite a while ago. Did we have any questions on the minutes of last month? Okay, none being heard. Any update from ADOA?
Lori, this month I did not have any updates for the committee. Any questions for me that I could try to answer for the group?
No, I know you sent a new format for our annual report. I have not had the chance to look at it or study it yet, so.
Okay. No problem. Please reach out if you have any questions or concerns on that. That's basically just kind of the framework that goes into the report. You may or may not have touched on some of those. Some of those you have, some of those you haven't, and that's okay. Please let me know if you have any questions moving forward on it. Again, it's not due till November 1st.
I'm so happy to hear that. Okay. Next, action items. So last month there were a lot of items that we requested, and the hospital has provided all those items. I did just send it out to the committee, but to just go over them briefly. I look like I'm ignoring you, so I'm looking at my big monitor. So the first item was the contraband and controlled items for civil and forensic. And it's pretty thorough. It goes through clothing accessories, personal hygiene, writing crafts, art supplies, electronics. I didn't know, this is to administration, I didn't know what NET meant, but I think it was something about treatment team approval or something.
I'm sorry, Laura, this is Mike. NET stands for Nursing Executive Team. So it's the hospital's nursing leadership team.
Okay, thank you. So a lot of the electronics, certain devices like Paperwhite e-readers and like Kindles and other things, CDs, DVDs, those need approval since specific topics may be not appropriate for some patients, I suppose. Mike, that's the reason.
Yeah, it also comes down to safety. So like, for instance, like CDs and DVD players, they can be snapped in half and then they're sharp objects then. So we need to make sure that if any patient does have access to those pieces of materials, that it's safe, that they can be trusted to use them and not, you know, makeshift a weapon out of them.
Okay. Thank you for that explanation. Then they have another category, which is other, which includes lots of various things, anywhere from cleaning objects to keys or just a lot of items. But it was a very specific, very involved list. Also, musical instruments, again, have to be approved by that NET, and the patient, the user, has to sign an agreement to be able to be permitted to have that item. That was one of the things we requested. The second thing we requested, real quick, was patient property, and it was provided for both the units CRU, civil and forensic, and then the policy, patient property, storage and contraband. And it went through what are the controlled substances, contraband items, prohibited, what the in-room storage is, the unit storage, the long-term storage. Let's see something. Okay, and Kim is also on, Mike, and Larry. But it was a very detailed list of what's permitted, what isn't permitted. And as I read through that, it also said what happens with materials or property that may not be contraband, but may not be permitted for the person. And I think some items can be stored, other items can be picked up by the, taken from the hospital, from the support system, the family, or sent to them. I think I read that somewhere. One thing that I found interesting, because it's come up before, property transfers between units. I know that there's been some allegations in the past that often when a patient is moved, they're told without a lot of notice, and they don't always have time to get all their things together and move to another unit. Here it says upon transfer, all the patient property is collected and transferred to the receiving unit. The patient property is reviewed by receiving unit to ensure there is no contraband items. Any controlled items have been approved. After transferring, the patient shall sign a patient property received form, document to receipt all of his or her properties. Items not permitted at the receiving unit can be stored in long-term storage request or request an approval by COO or designee or disposed of at the patient's request and expense. So again, I think that I think the patient's perspective was they don't always have time to detail everything they have before they're moved. And here it says that it's after they're moved that they're given their things to look over, if I'm understanding correctly.
That's true. The only problem is that we have our items in a bunch of different places. Some of our stuff is at the nurse's station, like the DVDs or makeup or things like that. And then there's other places that they store like our musical instruments. So sometimes when we're given such short notice to move, you don't remember all of your property because some of it is considered contraband. So it's in different areas. And so what we were asking the hospital previously is to give us a little bit more heads up so we can actually get, you know, our heads together and get everything that we need before we move.
So, hey, Kay, it's Mike. So I can definitely see how that is problematic. I guess I'll use the word many. In many cases, when the hospital elects to move a patient, our concern about giving so much pre-notice would be how that patient would react. So typically, if we move a patient, it's because of some type of a behavioral or a conflict between patient on staff. And if we were to give them, say, you know, we're going to move you in a week, we don't know what that patient would do over the next 4 or 5 days, if they would become more aggressive, more assaultive, more violent. So that's really why we're trying to walk a very fine line there between keeping the facility safe and the patients and the staff safe, and being able to monitor the individual's behavior, as opposed to making sure that all the property is, you know, lined up and can move in lockstep. But yeah, I can definitely see how that is an issue.
Yeah, we even have storage and contraband, and that's difficult to get to. And then we have stuff in the nurse's station, and then we have stuff in like just various different areas. So it's just difficult at times to like get everything together. And especially when you're told that you got a couple hours to move, it's hard to like remember where all of your items are. And it's only after we've moved that we remember. And a lot of times it gets lost.
No, yeah, that makes total sense. I can see how that'd be a problem. But that's kind of how that works, or why that works like that, Lori.
Okay. Thank you. Okay,
I'm
the
sorry,
next.
Sorry, this is B. I had a comment, please. So okay. I heard Michael Sheldon saying that in most cases, you know, this is a behavioral issue, but in those that aren't, and it does happen, and I can, you know, vouch for that, and probably Kay can as well, there should be the ability for the staff to be more organized and help them retain all of their belongings.
I'm not opposed to that. It's always an individual issue, though, Dee. So I'll take that under advisement.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, the next one was Arizona State Hospital Forensic Campus Patient Musical Instrument User Agreement. So it talks about what they can have, what they can't have. They have to read over a list of rules and sign it. Now, I didn't see one for civil, so or did I overlook it? Does that mean civil, they are not allowed instruments, musical instruments?
I'm going to ask Lisa about that one. My recollection, Lori, is that civil patients are not allowed to have personal instruments, like on the unit or on their person. They can use instruments in the rehab area of the civil mall. However, it's a little bit different, and I could be wrong here, so Lisa, jump in. But I do believe forensic patients are allowed to have the instrument on the unit based on the treatment team's approval.
Yes, that's exactly right. And the forensic rehab have like band and group music and individual music programming that's a little more set up for forensic patients. So they have the ability to store their own instruments, where civil just use community instruments through civil rehab. That's exactly right.
Okay, thank you. The next item that was provided was patient property received, and it's kind of detailed patient name, unit, room, date, how it came. So whether through a visit, through mail, UPS, or other, what the property was or is, description, quantity, and whether it's contraband or not, comments, signature of who's of the visitor dropping it off, the staff accepting it, and the patient receiving it. So that's a attachment. And then patient property contraband disposition tracking. So for those items that they're not allowed to have, it looks like there's a chain of evidence where they say, you know, where they track where it's going to and from. I think we'll have more discussion on that in our review shortly later. And then also a release of information request, that's in conjunction with the record review. So that's just information on confidentiality of the records that the IOC will be reviewing. And I think, let me think, other action items. Those were action items from the last meeting. Were there any others that I forgot about from my committee? Okay, follow up on previous or ongoing discussions. We talked about the search policy. While we're at it, we were able to review a search of a room after we had the request and voted on it last meeting. So we have the search of the review, and then we also have the review of the video of allegation of a staff kind of taunting. So there were several of us that went. Melissa, do you want to report on what you what we saw in the patient searches of the room. And then maybe Alice, you can report on the staff taunting. And remember, no disclosure of patient name or staff name, just trying to keep it as vague as possible, but you can say detailed of what you saw, but
Melissa, sorry, I'm not feeling great, so hopefully I'm loud enough. But for the room search, I think we watched probably for about 20 or 30 minutes. We watched for a while. We did watch some parts over again. But, you know, the patient was at the room, went into the room. There were originally about five staff, I think, outside the room. And the first thing that happened was that it looked like the patient's money was brought out and counted in front of them. And, you know, documented in some way, right? So that was like the first thing that happened. More people came to the, more staff came to the room. It looked like there was an inventory process, right? Where all, there was like lots of items kept coming out of the room and being put onto a cart, you know, a cart that was on wheels. We sort of asked about, okay, like is inventory taken there? And it's our understanding that inventory happens in another location where, and it might be the nurse's station, where photographs are taken, inventory is taken, and it happens there. There was a question, and a lot of, there was like back and forth, a lot of staff would leave and then come back, right? And then another cart would come. At one point, the patient followed the cart like out of the view of the camera. So presumably to the nurse's station to see where the items were being stored. There was a moment where the patient, like, I'm gonna say, punched the wall, I guess. It was brief. But like the entire, it's also our understanding that after that, more of the unit was being searched. So they were searching other rooms too. But I think that's pretty much the summary of what we saw.
Yeah. Right. I think what the other things that popped to mind, we saw a lot of things coming out, like two carts worth. It was a lot of things, some hygiene, just a lot of items we couldn't tell, but two carts worth. It was a lot of material.
You reminded me, there was like a whole bunch of towels were put on the floor, like a lot, like a pile. That also came out in addition to all the items that Lori's referring to.
And I think Alice mentioned that, you know, as a psych nurse, she's used to seeing these types of searches and looking for contraband, and we're just doing searches. And I think, Alice, your comment was that it wasn't sanitary taking the towels and throwing them on the ground, because you don't know, even if they look like they were clean, what's happened with those. And the other item was that the patient didn't appear to have shoes or socks on the entire time.
Yeah, that was a concern. Whenever you take laundry, like, you know, any sort of towels or linens, they need to go directly into a bag. And then because it was a room search, of course, they would go into, you know, a single bag so that they could later go through those towels. And then, you know, you don't know what's on towels that patients have used. And you, even if they look like they haven't been used, you don't know for sure if they have or haven't, and they were refolded. So, you know, that's what the OSHA, I think OSHA or JCO, that they need to be bagged and not thrown on the floor, especially in the public walkway. And then, yes, I saw him without socks on. And one thing when I work, I remind patients when they don't have socks on, you know, things happen in those public walkways or even in their rooms, and they could get it on their feet and into their skin and track it around. And I'm not saying it's perfect if they have shoes and stuff, but at least it's not on their skin if they walk through it. You know, it's just much more sanitary, especially since, you know, in urine, things like hepatitis virus live for like 10 days outside the body. And I'm not saying cleanups don't occur, but, you know, you never know if something's perfect or imperfect, especially when I saw like towels being thrown on the floor.
This is Mike. That's a good point, Alice. I'll talk with the team tomorrow morning about when they do room searches. Linens should go automatically into one of our soil linen bags to make sure that it's processed effectively. And then, you know, working, you know, and in psych the way that you do, you know that we can encourage the patients to wear
right
socks and shoes, but ultimately if they say no, there's not a whole lot we can do about it. Just continue to reinforce and educate.
Mike, what I do is I just kind of laugh and say, have you seen anybody do anything on the floor? Maybe a little pee pee or something. And I just kind of giggle with them, and then usually they'll put their socks on.
Yeah. Or shoes.
I have a different question. I was wondering, were the items removed actually contraband or things that may potentially pose a danger, or were they, because I mean, I don't think taking towels is that okay? Like, I can understand why the room search is necessary to remove contraband items, but they shouldn't be removing linens and things like that.
Well, I think the policy speaks to both contraband and excess. So patients have an understanding of the limit of the clothes, linens, personal items they can have in their room. And when it gets excessive, it becomes an infection control and a safety and a security risk. So the policy speaks to excess as well.
And then I believe you said, Lisa, that the excess goes somewhere else, into storage for that person.
Certainly, right. That's right, Barbara. If it's their property, then it just gets stored somewhere else or sent out of the hospital. Mm-hmm.
And I think in what we sent, it shows in the patient storage, they have two, and correct me if I'm wrong, you guys, two 18-gallon bins that they can use, and that's their storage.
That's true. We get two 18-gallon bins that are stored in contraband for us.
And that you're allowed access to it at least once a week if it's not in your room?
Yes, we are allowed once a week to go to contraband to get and retrieve items that we need out of storage.
Okay. So, Alice, do you want to talk about the staff taunting that we viewed, the alleged staff taunting. Sorry about that.
Okay. Okay. So honestly, at first glance, I thought that that person was a patient that was being de-escalated. And then I realized, no, wait a second. That's not. And somebody said who that, you know, person was. And he was very aggressive towards the patient to the point where it took, you know, a couple of the staff on the unit to get him kind of on one side and then the other to kind of get him back. And then the nurse stepped in the middle, and he didn't calm down immediately either. Like, he continued, and it was very distressing to me because his anger was beyond taunting. It was almost, you know, going at that person, at that patient. And he literally did have to be touched, held on the arm, and de-escalated and walked off of the unit. And it took a little bit of time. How many minutes was that, Lori, do you think?
I think that we saw once, and then we saw
yeah, two different.
The patient leave the unit and then he go towards the patient again. And then I think it was a nurse that put hands on the staff.
Yeah,
and then another staff blocked the door. So the person couldn't get to the patient, but it was disturbing that was a lead tech.
Too. It was disturbing.
It was very disturbing.
Yep. And the fact is he did not stop going at the patient. And then something that I'm sure, you know, would be important to Michael is he did this in front of other patients on the unit. So as we know in this field, that obviously tells other patients, this guy could hurt me. So I was curious if I could get a compilation of patient grievances filed on that lead tech, and more history, because I've seen people where they've started to lose it a little bit, as I get it, you know, patients know where to push our buttons. They get bored, or sometimes they just don't like a particular staff. You know, it's just something that happens, and we just kind of will do a tap out if I see somebody who's starting to amp a little bit towards a patient. But this was more than that. This was, the guy had to be stopped. I thought, I don't know, if I was a patient on that unit watching him go at that other patient and having to be stopped and then walked off the unit, I would be intimidated. And then I'd be afraid to file.
That's what we heard, right? That the patient filed a grievance and then pulled it back.
Right. But I believe, Lisa, you said it was refiled.
Well, what happens is whenever we get a complaint or grievance from any of our patients, we do a video investigation. And because that matter did not include any assaultive behavior, no code was called, nobody was put in a physical hold, no patient was put in a physical hold, because it didn't rise to that level, our team video reviewed it after we got the complaint from the patient. And so at that point, our process is we provide video review, we provide feedback and show that video to leadership on the unit. And it, speaking in general, anytime we have any concerns about the way a situation unfolds, it's elevated both to our whole exec team, including Mike, our human resource leadership, nursing leadership, and then the appropriate personnel measures are taken, whether it's coaching, training, whatever it may be, then that occurs at that point. So that's our process. That's the process that occurred in this instance.
How
the video was reviewed.
Okay. How many times are they coached before they're let go?
That's going to be based on I couldn't speak to that. I mean, Mike might be able to, but that's something that leadership is going to look at, and we've got our own progressive discipline policies for the whole state and for the department.
Right. Thanks.
This is Kay. I personally haven't seen the video, but I have a pretty good idea of which tech this is. I think it's a good idea to ask for the grievances filed on this tech, the past history, to see if there is an established pattern, because from my experience, I believe that there should be some evidence there.
Good. Then you're right there with me, because that's what I was hoping to get.
So am I hearing that you want to post motion?
Please, I'd like to make a motion to find out what grievances were filed against the staff member. I don't want to mention his name. If we can have that reported to us, that'd be great.
Over a period of what time? Over the last year?
Over the last 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm on board for that. 2 years. That's what I was thinking.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay.
Aye. Lori, I have a question.
Yes.
For Mike. Mike, are these criteria that you described, was actually somebody else on the committee mentioned, by which employees are held accountable for their actions, are they available to the public and or the IOC to review?
As far as like there's a few. I apologize, Chuck. I'm gonna have Lisa answer that definitively, but my understanding is that we have a few policies as far as ethical conduct of employees that is pretty much boilerplate language for all state employees that would essentially, you know, I think address your question. So that would be a policy document that we have on file.
Yes, but what I asked, Michael, was that policy that you have on file, is it available for review by this committee, or is it in the public domain, or is it held privately by Arizona State Hospital?
I mean, I think my understanding of the laws, of the rules are, Chuck, if the committee asks for a copy of our policy, then, and the committee approves it or votes on it, then we would divulge that policy to all of you. It's essentially a public document. If you ask for it, we would supply it. Is that correct, Lisa? Am I way off target on that one?
No, as best as I know, any policy as it exists, either a state agency or a hospital policy, would be public record, as far as I can imagine.
What would be the specific policy that would be engaged in this particular review of this particular employee?
What is the name of
that policy?
I'm not sure, because there's nobody on this call from Human Resources, so we'll have to find out. And I don't know how specific it would be, or but if there are any policies around what I'm hearing, Dr. Goldstein, is you're really looking for policies around progressive discipline?
A motion has just been made and passed that we get the records, I guess it would be, of this particular employee. It would be nice to have the policy by which those actions taken by the employee, which the hospital is reviewing in its decision to retain that employee or not retain that employee. It would be nice if the IOC could also see by what framework or structure you're actually making that decision by. We'd like to actually get that policy, those policies as well.
Understood.
So is there a motion?
I make the motion that Arizona State Hospital, I won't name any names, but Arizona State Hospital divulge or provide to this committee those policies that are impacting their decision on whether to retain or dismiss this employee based on this action we've been talking about, this specific action today, and any others that this employee has demonstrated in the past that is in the records of Arizona State Hospital.
Dr. Goldstein, I'm sorry, I think I do need clarification. My understanding was you were asking for hospital, state, or department policies around progressive discipline. Now it sounds like you're asking for specific human resource records on a specific patient. And I think that would be a different scenario, and any investigation that Human Resource does, I would not believe would be public record. We could certainly, I guess we can, if it's not a conflict, we can just look to see the number of complaints that have been filed by patients against this particular employee, but his personnel decisions, I do not believe would be public record, but the policies on how we come to progressive discipline decisions would be. Mike, do you agree?
Yeah, Lisa. I think we're saying the same thing, but in circles. So we should be able to release our approved policy documents around progressive discipline, ethical conduct of state employees, and our expectations therein. But as far as the personnel file of any employee, that would not be subject to release to the IOC. That's my understanding. I could be totally wrong, but I think that's the way this works.
Okay. So I think it's for the policies then.
No, yes, that's the motion that was made. I haven't heard a second or a decision by this committee.
Okay, so second.
I'll second that as well, Dee.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, so I think those were the our actions. We reviewed that. We did just.
I have a question, Lori. So what was the outcome of the grievance that was filed by the patient?
I think the person talked to, hold on, I'm getting an echo.
Was that withdrawn, Lisa, or what happened with that one? Do you know off the top of your head?
The patient withdrew it, and then we because we'd already reviewed video, we were able to provide feedback, training, and coaching.
Patient, I think, talked to the committee, and I think the patient is fearful of this staff member, and that's why after the committee had a telephonic, I think it was a telephone. I'm not sure if Melissa and Barb or Alice, if you saw the person in person, but they communicated that they were fearful of this staff and asked if we could review. And that's why we voted on it to review the video and see if we could, if we believe that there was staff taunting. So I think it did come from the patient. The patient's scared to report the tech because the tech is a lead tech. I'm not sure if they're still a lead tech or not, but if they're still on the same unit with the patient, we can all see why they could be intimidated.
Yes. It may also be advantageous. And I'm not, and by no means am I asking you or suggesting how you move forward, but it may be advantageous for the committee to look at perhaps all the other complaints that this specific patient has made against staff to see, to look for patterns. Because I think this is maybe, unfortunately, a one-sided conversation. And I think holistically looking at this would paint a better picture of what's going on.
Okay.
I agree. We would like to have access to review.
So this is my experience. I don't think that the patient, regardless of what the patient was doing, like I think that the staff need to have more self-control because I mean, a lot of the patients here are mentally ill, and if they're provoking staff, like they shouldn't be getting any type of response from staff. I don't feel that it lies within the patient's problem. I don't know. That's just my opinion.
Okay. No, I mean, agree. If I had been the charge nurse on the floor, no, I don't tolerate that. And I've never, ever, I've been a nurse since 1993. I've never seen anything like that. Medical or psych. And I work high acuity psych. So just saying.
Okay, so I think how we can move on is to, we're going to get the review of complaints on this particular staff member. Is there an interest to ask for all the grievances that the patient has filed to see if there is a pattern with against other staff? Because from we can ask him that, because it did look like other staff was trying to protect the patient when we were reviewing it, but again, we could get information on the patient as well as information on the staff member.
So, Lori, we also need the hospital side of things. So what they did with their investigation, specifically the questions that were asked and how they came to their conclusion.
I do continually hear over and over again that just because someone is there, there's a process that is put in place, or someone is spoken to, I think, maybe I'm getting this wrong, then automatically the grievance is denied as unfounded because the hospital fixed it, quote unquote.
I don't know. I mean, we can look and ask for what the outcome was. If there's a motion, we can't see personnel records or human resource records and things like that. We can.
Yeah, I understand that, but there, yeah. When the hospital investigates the grievance, there are staff members that come and interview and do whatever and do the background and write up a report. I think we should be able to see how they came to that conclusion and be able to understand that, you know, that has been you know, taken care of, versus just, you know, okay, well, we talked to the person involved, or, you know, we did whatever it was and we behind the scenes, and so therefore now it's unfounded because we already dealt with the problem, instead of actually validating these patients that there is a problem. Well, am I wrong?
I think we can ask, but I do see, as I read through the records, I don't know what happens, but I can see when there's a grievance filed or an incident filed, what happens if they find something wrong reviewing an incident report, then nursing or quality, I can often see, I can't remember the wording, but there's something to the effect of, after reviewing video or recommendations sent by the quality team, by the nursing team. So there is a process that occurs. Correct, Lisa or Mike?
Yes, that's correct. And we also track the action items. So if there's training on the unit or follow up with a process or a system, there's action items that the review team reviews and confirms got completed.
Okay. So are we ready to move on?
I want to do a motion to find out what happened during the investigation of that grievance.
Whether I think is it sufficient to say, instead of saying grievance unsubstantiated, can they say, I mean, if you guys found something that you thought needed correction, instead of saying there's unsubstantiated, can they say action items recommended, training plan put in place, something to that effect? So everyone understands that the administration is not tolerating that type of staff alleged aggression against a patient.
Yeah, Lori, they're invalidating these patients' concerns when they just unsubstantiate things without any kind of explanation other than, you know, the ones that are given. And it makes them feel as though they have no say in what happened. It's not right, in my opinion. And I would like to support, you know, some action here that can at least be more positive for the patient who are the mentally ill.
So I'm trying to understand whether you know, there's actions that are taken around that the hospital is doing, but if it says unsubstantiated, again, is that sending a message to the patients that it's tolerated? They may not know what's going on behind the scenes with a performance improvement plan or training or probation period or whatever.
Lori, I don't believe there has been a decision letter in this case because it was withdrawn by the patient. But again, that does not mean that we didn't follow up with what our findings were. We did have findings. We do not tolerate aggressive behavior by our staff ever. So that is always followed up with, and it's followed up quickly with leadership, with human resources, with the exec risk team. But in this instance, there is not a decision letter because there was not a formal investigation completed.
That's just one of many, though, like Lisa, that seems like we hear so often that everything is unsubstantiated, and the patients just feel like nobody cares.
Well, but Dee, we've looked at other videos where patients have said a staff was trying to hit them or block them or chase them. And the last one, and it was Ashley and I had looked at it, we could not substantiate it. We did not see what we saw a few days ago. So I think that...
Well, I didn't see this video. I'm talking in a global sense. I'm not talking about this just one specific problem. I'm talking globally. I didn't mean to infer that this particular case was, you know, like that. Sorry.
Okay. I think that, again, I'm not sure whether we as the IOC, we have the, you know, we have the ability, if we feel that we want to file a grievance for the patient for this particular incident, we can do that. And that way we'll have a decision letter on what happened. So that is within the purview of the IOC. So do I have a motion to refile a grievance for this patient? We're doing it, not the patient, against the staff for aggressive and targeting behavior.
I give the motion to file a grievance to look into this matter.
Okay, do I have a second?
Yeah, I second. This is Alice.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. So moved. Okay, so can we move on now? Okay, review search policy, other action. The one thing I wanted to bring up was that Dee provided some information, and I will put it in the chat, Larry, of a group, a company that has therapy dogs, and it states their dogs are certified. They're willing to come out even during COVID. There's a testimonial from Banner University Medical Center in Phoenix about the therapy dogs. So maybe, you know, I know it's a process to get providers on the approved list, but here's an opportunity maybe to get more therapy dogs in there. So it's in the chat if
was anybody from the hospital on that? Oh, it's in the chat now.
Called the Alliance of Therapy Dogs, and the website is therapydogs.com, and under that they have all kinds of information, and under facilities it very specifically states that they are certified dogs, and I think it was that page. Under that page, it says that, you know, there's extensive testing and they have certified therapy dogs, and exactly how they go about all that. And they're clean, they're covered by insurance. And then there's several testimonials, and one of them that looks across is Banner University Medical Center. So they physically go into hospitals and provide this service, and right there in Phoenix.
So is it a national organization with a local footprint?
I do believe so, yeah.
Okay. We'll definitely look into that. Thank you very much for giving us this information.
You're welcome.
Okay. Next, ASH administration update.
Yeah, hi everybody. So the only update that I have from the administration is not specific to ASH, it's ADHS overall. Governor Hobbs did formally name Jenny Kunico as the director of ADHS. That was a couple of weeks ago. Director Kunico had been serving in the interim slash acting position since December of 2022. She has vast experience in operations at health services, human resources, IT, licensing, prevention services, public health services. She's been acting in that role for almost 8 months now, approximately. So very happy to have her in that position officially. And as soon as things kind of like settle down a little bit and she can come up for breath, I want to get her out at the hospital sometime in the next month or so to join me on rounds across the campus to meet patients and staff.
That sounds great.
That's, yeah, wonderful idea.
Okay. So I don't have to talk right now. Would you like everyone that went to the forum to report what they saw at the forums recently?
Okay. Sorry, I didn't bring my notes with me. I believe, was it Melissa? Were you present?
I was there.
Yeah, Barb and I were there.
Yeah, I was there. I was at Civil Forum.
Okay.
Hang on. I'm looking. Okay. The past complaints were updated. Like the ladies want to get their hair styled, and someone in transport does hair, so when she's able, has the time. She'll do it. One of the patients had said that they got to see a therapy dog. But just as passing by. The trash cans, I believe, to be emptied more often, and they want more voices to be heard. They wanted vending choices were getting, they wanted more healthy things, which some have been put in. And there was a complaint about the machine rips them off. Someone else wanted protein drinks, muscle things like Naked or Muscle Moo or whatever that one is. They want to have, for like 1 week at a time, Xboxes that are on the unit. And rehab wants age-appropriate activities for them. They keep doing the same thing. And the basketballs are flat. So the patients were told to let rehab know that they're flat. The issue of smoking came up, and no one can smoke at ASH on the grounds or anywhere. On Ironwood, they would like to have a barber again. I didn't totally get. They want shavers so they can help others shave. And I think what it says, I'm not sure. Okay, and then they want the gardening back, because that's helpful, not only therapeutically, but in terms of allergies, because it's hypoallergenic. There's been a threat of a person walking someone to the CT orderly, and they want more representation, and that want to be treated courteously. The shavers aren't good. Shaving cream would help.
Was this on the civil or forensic or both?
Civil side.
Okay.
Yeah. They want to, it was expressed that they want to do their own laundry because clothes seem to get missing, or they get other people's laundry. And they want to wash and fold and put away themselves, and then put it in proper storage. And sometimes patients' clothes aren't labeled, so other people get their clothes. There also was a question about when patients want to know, like when patients are arguing when it's time to give meds, why can't they get the morning meds ready the night before so that it will help get things going? And the response to that was that it's a safety issue, and the meds all need to be scanned to be given, and it's checked for that it's the right med, the right time. So all that can't be done the night before. There are hygiene boxes. Staff don't put things back the right way, staff doesn't do that, but things fall out and some of their hygiene products are missing. The boxes need to have labels. They need to talk to the lead tech about what's going on. They complain about staff, but say other places they've been have been hell. That's all I have.
I went and grabbed my notes. I have the notes for the forensic form, if you guys would like to hear that.
Can I really quick comment on the civil forum first, though?
Yeah.
I'm sorry for interrupting. Barbara, you just gave us a two-page bullet point list, so I had a few things to talk about. I don't have answers to everything that they said, so I'll do my best to respond. We've historically, and everyone on this call is aware of this, we've historically had issues with maintaining a barber on contract or on staff at the hospital. The demand for barber services does not warrant a 40-hour position. So we get somebody who's considered quote unquote pool or part-time, and they come in for a few weeks, few months, and then they find a new job, and then they're gone. It's also difficult to find somebody who wants to do barber services in this type of environment. So it's very much hit or miss. I would actually very much appreciate if anybody on this call or on the committee had any references or any contacts that we could potentially reach out to. Maybe like a barber school or a cosmetology school of that we could have a contract with that would send folks out to the campus to do this work for us, and then they would see and then they would receive credit or something along those lines towards their barber or cosmetology degree. I'll be honest, folks, we are struggling in this area, and I'm not sure what avenues that we can explore that we haven't already tried to before. I can tell you that we did change the job description for the barber to be a barber slash cosmetologist. So I think that may open up the candidate pool potentially to get us more people applying for it. But if any of you have any ideas, you know, by all means, reach out to us, let us know, because we definitely want to make sure that we're taking care of our patients as best as we can. Lori, what do you think?
I was just thinking, I mean, we can ask around and see who we know, but I'm also wondering, a lot of times if people get in trouble, I'm not talking felonies or anything like that, but they have to do community service if they're drunk driving or whatever. It would be nice if anyone that has the skills could do their community service cutting hair at Ash, but I don't even know how to find out, or how do you register as an acceptable community service venue? You'd have to get through clearance, right?
Yeah, sure, correct. I think that'd be the biggest hiccup right now is that by statute, anybody who provides services on our campus must have a valid level one fingerprint clearance card. So if they have an mm-hmm. active felony or something on file, then DPS would reject them and they would not be a viable candidate even under a community service perspective. So yeah,
I was thinking misdemeanors. Felonies.
yeah, there's I'm sure there's definite ways that we can look at this that we just have not peeked into yet. So if anybody has any ideas, I would definitely entertain them.
So is there a monetary, I know you said you've contracted in the past, so I'm assuming there's monetary reimbursement for somebody coming in to do that. I mean, I may know somebody that lives in the area who might be interested, but obviously she would have to be reimbursed for her time and financially.
Definitely. So, I'm sorry. And that was D, I apologize. Correct?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in the past, we've had contracts out there, and I believe we have reimbursed on a per haircut, per capita per haircut. And that will be for a contractor. But then if they do elect to join us as an employee, it would be an hourly reimbursement rate.
Okay, and maybe somehow you could maybe quietly, because I'm going to ask it right here, right now, like, let us know exactly what the monetary reimbursement would be, what the pay would be. So if I had somebody who was even interested, I could kind of give them a range of what maybe they could expect.
I think what I'll do to make sure that the hospital maintains complete transparency publicly, I will just tell the operations team at the hospital to repost the public bid, and that will have all of the dollar figures in there. And I apologize, Dee. It actually, as long as this individual that you know is licensed and has their own company/insurance, they can bid and they can tell us what rate they want to charge us.
Okay, absolutely. Thank you.
Right. Well, I'll see about getting that lined up in the next couple of weeks. It should not be that big of a deal because it's already been posted once. We can just refresh it. The other thing, Barbara, that I wanted to speak on really quick is the patient comments about video games on the unit. So Civil is set up a little bit differently, actually quite a bit differently than the forensic hospital, whereas the forensic hospital, and you know, Kay can speak to this, there's kind of separate rooms off of the day room that have a TV set up with a PlayStation and so on and so forth, where the patients can, I believe they pick a time slot that they want and they can go in there and play video games or whatever it is. Civil does not have that, unfortunately. It's essentially one big room with dorms off the side. So it's not really configured to be, to do what exactly they want to do. What we're doing instead, Barbara and committee members, is we have purchased, and we are in the process right now of, this has been a long process. It's taken too long as far as I'm concerned, but we are actually setting up what we're kind of calling a video arcade. It's going to be in the gym for the civil patients. We've installed two 65-inch televisions. They're already mounted onto the walls. We're right now in the process of getting PlayStations that will be also put in there, so that when we have free gym time, when we have opportunities for rehab, the patients can go there, they can play PlayStation, they can play video games independently or against one another. But I recognize that as a problem a long time ago, and I've been trying to address it. I love playing video games. That's kind of how I relieve my own stress. So I wanted to do that for the patients as well. So that is in the works. And Barbara, my hope is that that is up and running by the next time this committee meets.
Thank you, Mike. Yep. Any That's other great. Questions for me?
Oh, I had a question. You said that patients were complaining about staff, but then said it's been way worse in other places. Other places other than Ash, other places, other units.
Yeah. No. I'm sorry. Other behavioral health facilities than Ash.
Okay.
Yeah, I could believe that.
Okay, if you guys are ready, I can go over what happened at the forensic forum.
Okay.
Okay, so some of the topics we talked about was walking horse. Some of the patients here have jobs, but have nobody on the outside to actually order them items to be sent in. And specifically, there's two patients on Sago that don't have family that can order them items. And so they were hoping that they could open up walking horse to include the makeup and personal hygiene. We didn't get a response on that. We also asked for more food visits. We currently have 4 per year. We're asking for 6 to 8 per year. Other patients had complained about phone calls, the operator not picking up, but we've already kind of talked about that. One of the patients actually brought up the fact that grievances are unsubstantiated, and it actually feels like they don't really go anywhere. It's what Dee, I think, was saying, that you know the patients actually feel that it, you know, they feel invalidated because they're saying that their grievance was invalidated, and it doesn't feel very good. The patients are also asking on the forensic side to have more exercise groups. The exercise groups are actually filling up at capacity, and we have a bunch of people still wanting to exercise, and considering that the forensic patients are pretty chronically overweight, especially with the psych meds and stuff, it seems like that should be something that the hospital should be providing. If the people want to exercise, they should be there should be outlets for that. Other patients are asking for access to water. There is currently not a drinking fountain out on the outside because of the pigeon problem that we were having, but they were asking if we could have water coolers out there, like at Mall Walk or Run Group, just because it's hard to go back to the unit to get water to come back out and do all that stuff because we have to go through 3 doors. So they're asking for water out during the exercise groups. Another patient had chemical sensitivities to this Clorox hydrogen peroxide that they use as a disinfectant, and passed out a pamphlet to all of the ASH administration to let them aware of what OSHA standards were. Another patient asked about hair dye, but seeing that we don't have a barber or a cosmetologist, I'm guessing that that's probably out the door. And then the last thing that they discussed is a lot of times, like, we feel that as patients, we get blanketed policies. Like, 1 or 2 patients will act up, and then we get this blanketed policy that covers everybody. And we were wondering why that is, and why, like, it doesn't go into like an individual treatment plan as opposed to like a blanketed policy. And we came up with a couple of examples, but that's kind of frustrating too. And so that was basically the patient form on the forensic side.
Okay, I had a few more things to add, if that's okay. Uh-oh, I think I just lost.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Melissa. I was on mute.
Oh, there we go. So, okay, I do think for the walking horse, I had written down that one of the staff said that they would look into that. Right now the accounts aren't set up,
to order non-electric items. So I'm hoping that they're really doing that.
Patients have ordered through Walking Horse here on the unit. They're stopping it now. So what they have to do is they have to file a B1, which is effectively the hospital writing a check on their behalf out of their account. Mm-hmm. And they're stopping the patients from able to like to actually create that B1. So they can't issue the check to Walking Horse. So they can actually order through Walking Horse. That's not the issue. The hospital is putting up blocks so that the patient can't use their own money to purchase the items from Walking.
Okay.
Thanks. I have a question. Jay, can you hear me? Jay? Yeah, you mentioned in your list of things on the forum that patients object to the fact that when one or two of them does something wrong, it results in an overall general policy rather than something that pertains to them individually, like changing their individual plan. And you said you had examples, but you didn't provide any. Can you provide the committee here with an example or two of what you're talking about?
So I don't know if this is true, but basically we've heard that patients hoard, and so they can't cut down on the number of snacks or drinks that we get per pop run. So now we're limited to 2 drinks, 2 snacks. Whereas before it wasn't quite unlimited. I think it was 4 and 4. But they scaled that back. I've heard either due to patient hoarding or patients getting gaining weight. And so instead of actually addressing each individual patient, they just do blanketed policy. So that was one of the things that was upsetting some of the patients, is that their snacks on pop run have been cut in half. And it felt like a blanketed policy as opposed to addressing individual issues. Somebody else had mentioned boots, but I think after talking to staff about it, staff said that the boots have been taken off, not as a blanketed policy, because some of the patients have kicked staff with their boots, and you know, obviously that hurt, and it's a safety concern. But that, it, in a sense, it is a blanketed policy, because instead of addressing the few individuals that are abusing, you know, the our leeway into getting boots or not boots. Like, you know, because some of us just have boots, and that's just how it is, and it's fine. But they do make blanketed policies like that. So instead of addressing the few that are causing the problems, they come up with blanketed policies. And so some of the patients are getting kind of frustrated because the ratchet only kind of turns one way in here.
So, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Golson, we actually discussed the snack issue in the last meeting, and Kay's right. It was the issue with patients just going in and raiding the snack machines, and then there would not be any snacks available when the next unit or the subsequent units would go to the machine to buy chips or whatever it was. And then we also have patients who, like Kay said, I think she's correct in using the word hoarding, but realistically what they were doing was buying a bunch of snacks and then trying to sell them to other patients and have their own little private, you know, Circle K set up. So we wanted to mitigate that. That's the impetus behind that.
It would be a little bit more helpful if we could actually address the few, because they're not, I mean, everybody's not running a store in here. I mean, there's a few patients that wind up ruining it for everybody. And instead of putting these blanketed policies on everybody, it would be nice if in their treatment plan, they are limited to buying only 2 snacks, or they have repercussions that if they wind up buying in excess at the vending machines, that they can't go on pop run for the rest of the week. I mean, there needs to be some checks and balances with the individuals that are causing the problems, not this blanketed policy. And it's just frustrating because like a lot of us are following the rules. I mean, the majority of us are following the rules, and it's just frustrating to have our liberties kind of taken from us at the expense of a few, you know, bad apples.
Sounds reasonable.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with that statement, Kay. I think by and large, the majority of patients are trying to follow the rules. They're talking with their treatment teams. They're engaging with their providers. But there's a handful of folks that are incredibly problematic, and that's where unfortunately we need to focus the most of our attention to get that taken care of. Let me see what I can do.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Thank you. I still have a couple more things.
Oh, go ahead. Hey, do you think a limit of four for everyone would be reasonable? Because I think the initial thought was that two vending machine snacks per day was like pretty reasonable. Do you think four would be reasonable if we did put a limit on it? I thought two seemed reasonable.
Four was what we had before. Four snacks totals, four and as many sodas as you want. But there are patients that are doing stores, and there's patients that are hoarding, and those types of patients. And the issue mostly lies with the blanketed policies.
Well, we do have to have a lot of blanketed policies, but that's the challenge. Is like, where do you, like, if it's a limit that needs to be raised or something, then maybe we can talk about that. So I appreciate the clarification.
Kay, was it four per day or four per pop run? Because I know you guys go on more than one.
It was four snacks per day and unlimited sodas.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Uh-huh.
Thank you. Now, Melissa, you had something?
Just a few more things. Kay, you can correct or clarify me. Hopefully I'm not repeating something that Kay already reported on. There was a concern that there's one operator that's not picking up calls, that this operator is either out on the mall or doing things, not answering the calls. And I guess there's been a lot of consistent sort of issues with that. One of the suggestions was to try to write down when that was happening. And, you know, the patient said, well, it's kind of difficult because they don't have easy access to writing instruments. So I think that, though, the staff, I want to say that the staff was going to continue to monitor that situation. There's another comment about the extended phone time is helping. So it was, you know, referring back to that action taking place. There was a request for increase in number of coffee times. Like, could there be one more time for decaf? And then there's two more things asking about some more books and perhaps some more like New York Times bestsellers. And then also getting a mirror in the gym, recognizing that that's going to have to be, you know, secured. And then that's all I had for that.
Lori, are you okay if I try to respond to some of those?
Yeah.
Okay.
Please do.
So I did the list, Melissa and Kay, was presented to me afterwards. I did approve the mirror for the gym. I said go ahead and do that. So we'll try to get that ordered for everybody. As far as the water, I agreed. I said yes, rehab should have a cooler out there, so that patients who are on outside walks or whatnot can refill their water bottles or their thermoses that they have. So we will make sure that moving forward, rehab does have a cooler of ice water available for the patients to use. As far as exercise groups, I absolutely agree that if those are filling up, then that means that they are in high demand, and we should look at expanding them if at all possible. Again, that will obviously be based on staffing availability, and then also looking at what are the most popular groups that we should be enhancing or offering more often than we currently do. And that's a project that Lisa's been working on with rehab for several months now, as far as looking at the rehab programs that we offer, what needs to be potentially expanded, what are high engagement activity items for patients from the rehab perspective, so that we can get the most utility out of the programs that we're offering on campus. So I completely agree with the exercise. If we can do that, we will go ahead and do that moving forward. And then the other thing that I wanted to comment on really quick was the food visits that Kay mentioned. I responded to that. I honestly, my personal response is that I have no problem with having more food visits, whether that goes to 6 or to 8 or whatever it may be. I would definitely want to talk to the social work team and the security team because they manage those. What I will not support at this point, though, is a situation where a individual brings in a individual, you know, visitor from the outside, brings in food, and there's multiple patients who are not associated with that visitor eating. We're not trying to set up like a buffet here, you know, for the patients. So it can be a one-on-one session, and then we'll look at how to potentially expand that past 4. But I, as the CEO, I have no problem with having more than 4, but I don't want it to get out of hand. So that's all I have right now.
I appreciate all of that. And then just the one last thing with the walking horse thing. I just know that there's a couple of patients here that just don't have any means. And like, if you looked at the walking horse catalog, the prices are pretty ridiculous. Like most people wouldn't want to order hygiene and stuff for them, but they have really no other choice. And so I don't know if you'd reconsider that. The patients that have ordered from Walking Horse have ordered personal hygiene products. I know that they've done it in the order that the hospital requires. They get a property request form. They submit that to the PNUM. The PNUM signs off on it, and then they will call Walking Horse and place the order, and then get the V1 and then send the check to Walking Horse. That's how they've done it. They haven't ordered anything, you know, that they're not supposed to order. And even if they did, it wouldn't be approved on the property request form anyway. So there's already a safety or a check in place for them to not order, you know, like a TV or something out of the catalog, because it just wouldn't be approved on the property request form to begin with. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So if I heard you right, Kay, are the hygiene items still a problem? Because it sounds like you said that was being approved.
It was approved, and then because I had mentioned during one of the meetings that my unit was allowed to do it because another unit wasn't, that they came down unilaterally and said that nobody can order personal hygiene products anymore from Walking Horse.
Okay.
So they've blocked one. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Thank you for bringing my attention.
Okay. Thank you.
So a couple things. One, on the hygiene products, if we could get a list, I think it can't have alcohol as number one ingredient and things. But if we could get a list of what are the hygiene products, maybe we'll have donations for those patients that don't have anyone and they wouldn't have to order.
I think that they need it on such a regular basis, and they're working and they have the money. It's just that the hospital won't issue the check to Walking Horse to pay for it. Do you see what I'm saying?
Okay.
Yeah, I'll look into this, Lori, and figure out what's going on.
Okay.
Because it sounds like it's allowed on one unit and not the other, but we'll verify that. We'll make sure that it's across the board acceptable.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and the other thing with food visits, I know even in other psych hospitals, there is no sharing of food. You know, it's hard when you have one family that visits very often and brings food, and then you have some patients that don't have anyone. The patient themselves wants to share with their friends, or it's really hard. It's something that happens in all the psych hospitals I have visited. Sorry.
Yeah.
So I see the challenge.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So I think we're done there. Anything else, Melissa?
Well, we did have a visit after the forensic forum.
Oh,
I don't know
okay.
if we.
So, yeah, go ahead and do the visit, because we had less incident accidents this month. I mean, almost half from what I could tell page length. So we don't have a lot of that. So go ahead with the patient visit.
Okay. And Barb was with me too. So, yeah. And Barb, if you want. So this is a non-contact visitation, just everybody knows. And, I'm just gonna, obviously there's like alleged in front of everything, but I'm not gonna say that every time. So the patient was very concerned with being, there was an incident, and said that they were attacked by a staff member. The staff member was yelling at them, telling them to get out of the hallway. Kind of swore at them, tried to provoke them, it sounded like. The patient tried to go back to their room, but the staff person kept sort of daring him. And I guess would do this off camera is what, you know, was being said. They said they were tackled and punched in the rib cage, but there was no bruises. There were two other staff people came to the room, said some things that were derogatory, and then did some other things. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was, but ultimately, he was suicidal, so there were two on one with him. Because, you know, because of all what happened.
Right, and then put him in seclusion.
Just to go ahead and order.
Okay. Yeah. And, you know, it sounded like initially he was okay now. In terms of, you know, my off the cuff thinking about the risk of suicide for him. And then he said, but, you know, I would still do it, or, you know, it's still going on and I'm, you know, it's still right up there, something for me to do.
Yeah, they kept asking, like, why aren't the staff people trying to de-escalate CERT? But again, you know, the patient was saying it felt like it was, the issues kept getting escalated by the staff. Said that, that, as Barb said, you know, the two-on-one said that they couldn't access legal documents, they had electronics in storage, they couldn't access, they couldn't play their guitar. I was very concerned about this one staff person coming back that weekend, and asked us then to follow up and look at some incident reports and security footage and their treatment plan. I will say too that he was obviously medicated. I mean, I will say that he said that he was very medicated and kept apologizing. For maybe not being clear.
I thought he was clear in what mm-hmm. he was saying to us, mm-hmm. but definitely the way he looked and his speech indicated that he was over-medicated. In my non-clinical view.
I think that Melissa had reached out because there was such a concern. Mm-hmm. And I reached out to administration, and I was told that I was very happy that they were looking into it, and the person was put on administrative leave while investigating the allegations. So I was relieved that that was occurring.
Well, that's good.
I don't know the outcome, but I was relieved that they put someone that was allegedly taunting a patient was put on leave while they did an investigation, which is what all organizations do typically. Okay, anything else from the visit? This was a physical visit, right? After
yes.
the forum.
Yeah, this was in person, but non-contact, yeah.
Okay, anything else?
I think that's it on this patient, on the and from the visit with him.
Okay.
Hi, Polly Giesel. I think as a member of the Central Arizona IRC, I can speak, correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay. I want to thank you for looking into this. You and I had some text exchanges on it. It's the situation that you just described is one with which I am familiar. And I'm glad that apparently the hospital took the steps to remove the staff from the unit. I want to say that I see a lot of patients, a lot of prisoners, a lot of inmates, a lot of jail detainees who have had similar situations and who are traumatized, who are rattled, who cry, who shake, and who are afraid for their lives and their well-being because of the situation of being in a locked unit with three people demeaning you and treating you this way. This is one of the worst instances in 20 plus years of practicing law that I've heard about. And I'm really glad that this apparently so far has had the response that it has had, because it may be the best example of how proper risk management and proper human resources can deflect subsequent action that is not in anybody's best interest. But I want to emphasize that this was a serious incident. Very serious. Thank you.
Thank you. So anything else, Melissa or Barb, from the visit?
No, I don't have any more.
Okay. One thing, looking over the incident and accidents, even the assault perpetrators, it seemed like there are significantly less. I mean, still you have one patient that was responsible for 11 incidents, mostly on other peers, but a few, less than a quarter of them on staff. Then the next highest patient had 4 incidents, 3 on staff, 1 on, and then from that point forward, it's like 3, 4, 2, 1. But it seems like there's been a reduction of assaults, Mike, from what I can see, especially the assault perpetrators.
Yeah. Hi, Lori. So you're correct. I'm not sure exactly what date span you're looking at right now, but June of 2023 and July of 2023 have been two of our lowest assault event months in at least 12 to 24 months. So we're very happy to see those numbers going down. And I think you said it perfectly that even when we do see assaults happening, it's a very small number of patients who are the aggressors in these incidents. And having Dr. Flowers, our new CMO, on hand, he is looking very closely at these patients who are the on our top aggressor list to talk to the treatment team, figure out what we can do differently as far as medications or changes to any kind of a therapy sessions that they're experiencing or going through to really bring that down. And I think there's one thing that we are seeing as Dr. Flowers is conversing with the treatment team, and this is something that I think this entire committee is probably aware of, but if not, I think it's important that everybody knows that there are, I'll say, a handful of patients, but probably more than a handful of individuals that we've identified that truly should not be at the state hospital. These are individuals with severe neurocognitive disorders, neurodevelopmental disorders, who really should be in a skilled nursing facility somewhere. Their psychiatric diagnosis is being addressed by medications, but there are secondary and tertiary diagnoses being, whether it's a DD, ID, TBI, whatever it may be, that's becoming prevalent, and that is really predicating their behavior. Unfortunately, the state does not have a state-run nursing home or an environment that these individuals should go to really address that need. So they're housed on our civil campus, and the civil campus forensic hospital, these are psych-specific facilities. So a lot of these times you get these individuals who are aggressive, assaultive. It's symptomatic of dementia or some other kind of secondary diagnosis other than psychiatric. That is something that we really are trying to work with Access and the health plans about getting these individuals to the correct level of care, so that they can get the treatment that they truly need and deserve, and are entitled to based on their eligibility and their enrollment. But unfortunately, right now they're at the state hospital, so we're doing our best to manage them as best as we can.
If I could ask the question, Mark.
Yes.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, in total, I believe I may be off a little bit. You have on the civil side about 115 beds or so. Is that about right?
Yeah, it's 117, Dr. Goldstein.
117, mm-hmm. Yeah, sir. Of those civil beds, how many are occupied by the kind of people that you could be off-ramped, so to speak, to a more significant, a more appropriate facility?
Like that's a fantastic question, Dr. Goldstein. Depending on the scope and the breadth of the other facility, I would say genuinely probably close to 30 would be individuals that could potentially go to another kind of facility, whether that be a skilled nursing facility, a SNF, or a facility specifically designed for individuals with DDID as the prevalent diagnosis. And then potentially there's probably about 15 on forensics that would also meet that criteria. Unfortunately, because of the whole court order process, these individuals are essentially sent to the state hospital. So our hands are tied when it comes to moving them to a different kind of facility. But realistically, we can only provide the services that we're allowed to provide by license and by our clinical and our staff expertise. When our patients kind of age into that area where they're becoming more elderly, they're, you know, unfortunately, dementia may set in, we're just not equipped, whether it's staff wise or from a functional environmental standpoint, to deal with those individuals. So we really do need, Access and all techs to step in and help us out to get those individuals into a facility that was designed and intended to meet their needs.
And Altex,
go ahead, Lord.
I was just going to say that Altex often will run if they see serious mental illness. And if it's not from Parkinson's, yeah.
Yeah, and you're exactly right, Lori and Dr. Goldstein, that we do, our social work team at the state hospital, we're constantly interacting with the Altex staff about coming out, doing evaluations of our patients to get them Altex approved. And you're absolutely right that it's been my experience that the Altex reviewers will say, well, the person's acting like that because of their psychosis or their psychiatric diagnosis. Well, no, this is clearly an issue with dementia. So we're always having those conversations and trying to get them approved for the benefit package that they should be accessing so that they can be transferred to another facility that can meet their needs. And in some cases, unfortunately, even skilled nursing facilities will say, we're not going to take that individual because they are aggressive or whatever terminology terminology they use, but realistically, you know, unfortunately, individuals who do have dementia in some cases are prone to being, that their behavior is not essentially, you know, baseline stable. So we're always trying to fight these, and I shouldn't use the word fight, but we are trying to negotiate these circumstances for every individual admitted to our campus.
Thank you. Laurie, hi. Holly Giefel. I'm really glad to hear this commentary. It's refreshing because it's very different than what we heard from prior administrations. For at least 3 years, and certainly back to the beginning of the Joint Legislative Council on Psychiatric Capacity, which is now going into its second or third year, the issue of patients who are at ASH, who have as a fundamental, a primary, or a predominant diagnosis, IDD, DD, autism, or other cognitive problems secondary to traumatic brain injury, or mainly that. That's been a topic for 3 to 4 years. It's been actively talked about. There's testimony on the record. We've actively tried with clients. Josh Mozell and I have been talking about this for several years. So the fact that the hospital is actively engaging and talking with representatives from ALTEC is, I'm grinning ear to ear. I'm so happy to hear that. If I may, the issue is not dealing with workers from ALTEC. This needs to be at the highest level, because there, in addition to those patients, I'm familiar with one patient who's wheelchair bound and civil, no legs, one arm, and no business being in the state hospital. So this is has been a topic of conversation, and I am so glad that we have a new stream of thought and a new approach to problem solving. We have heard for several years by talking with staff and physicians and other patients that 25 to 30% of the total population at the state hospital should be elsewhere. And that would obviously make available lots of beds for patients who need to be there and cannot be. So I'm really glad to hear that. There is also a state statute which says that if the state hospital can't provide the services that are needed, they shall refer the patient somewhere else. And I'll be happy to give the committee that statute. So I think that in terms of human rights violations, I know the Arizona Center for Disability Law is interested in this. We're having a follow-up conversation because of the number of autistic patients who are without autism management plans and are suffering. So I'm really enthusiastic to hear this new approach. And I think the IOC, in terms of true human rights issues, this is a lot more, it's very important. And I commend you guys for having this discussion. And please be assured that the lawyers involved with this population, both the SMI and the DD population, are completely committed to helping to find a solution sooner rather than later.
So thank you, Ms. Giesel. What I'll, I appreciate your comments. What I'll add is that the mentality that I've had since taking over as CEO has been very specific to medical necessity for treatment. You know, almost adopting a commercial based level of care at the state hospital, where if an individual, you know, does not meet the need, the clinical necessity for long-term inpatient psychiatric care, if they can be cared for someplace else, then we should do what we can to get them where they belong and where they can be effectively taken care of and have their needs met. So that's been my approach, and we're trying to get that solidified.
Thank you.
That I appreciate that, and I hope that you'll reach out to everybody you can who may have the ability, the inclination, and the heart to help you accomplish that. And I think this is the time to pull together as colleagues with a shared interest in these patients so that we can boost the likelihood of success in September of 2023, not 24 or 25. Let's make this happen. That will do more for the well-being of the patients at ASH who need to be there and the patients at ASH who need to be somewhere else. And I'm all in.
I sincerely appreciate that.
Thanks. I appreciate you.
Mike, do you have you included the memory impaired facilities in your search as opposed to just SNFs?
Yeah. So we're trying whatever we can, Barbara, to find the right locations for our folks. Whether it's, like I said, neurocognitive memory disorder issues, dementia issues, it's trying to find the best fit for the patient to meet their immediate needs where they currently are. There is lacking capacity at all levels of care, unfortunately, and that's not an Arizona issue, that's a national issue that we're all trying to navigate. There are people who need to get into the state hospital because they have a psychiatric condition that we can assist and stabilize them with. But in order to do so, we have folks in the state hospital right now that realistically should be in a different facility someplace getting the care that they need. So the term I like to use, and it's, I don't know if it's very common, is systemic bidirectional patient throughput. So in order for the state hospital to really function successfully, we need to be able to admit and discharge patients based on their clinical need. And in order to do that, the system must be must have these throughput channels established so that we can send patients back down to a lower level of care or to a different facility to meet their needs and then take people into the state hospital based on their immediate need and of obviously the court orders dictation that we do so. The system is congested across the board. And you know, the state hospital is, we are one facility of hundreds of entities providing care in Arizona. And we can only do so much based on our resources and based on kind of, you know, why we exist. We need everybody else to also be in line to meet the ultimate, our goals to be successful. But yeah, you're absolutely correct. We're looking at every avenue to get these folks to where they need to be.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's quickly move on. I pulled just two incident reports. One was ASH 2023-2844. It was unusual and interesting, and it evolved around a tech, a BHT, that put on an all-star wrestling video in the day room because a patient requested it. But when the video started, because wrestling is kind of aggressive, assaultive, then some patients got agitated and began to act out, as one will, right? Trying to be the character in the movie. And after that, they stopped showing that. The question I had was that it was reviewed and no recommendations. I mean, this to me would be like wrestling, all-star wrestling should not be put on in the day room. That to me would be a good blanket policy because I don't see any instance that aggression like that wouldn't invite more aggression or aggressive behavior.
Lori, I agree. Let me look into that one a little bit more. We try to make sure to accommodate the patients if they want to watch stuff on TV, but you know, specifically in situations like this, there are certain things where, you know, we should just nix. And if something is called all-star wrestling, I mean, it's not, it shouldn't be, it should be pretty clear what this is. So let me follow up on that one.
Thank you. And the other one was Ash 2023-3015. It was a staff member approaching a patient, and it seemed like aggressive interaction between the two. And it looked like the staff was provoking, prompting, like he wants to fight. So basically, a staff member had an abrasion. But what was interesting is in the nursing notes that the staff member was an agency person, and they were immediately flagged as a do not return to Ash after that, and they were placed on suspension as they reviewed the incident. So there wasn't a lot of detail in the report, but again, I was encouraged to see that if a staff is acting in a way that's not de-escalating, but possibly escalating, that there was action taken to mitigate that situation.
Yes.
That's all I had on incident. And like I said, there were many fewer than typical, which to me is a good sign. And I hope is an indication of Dr. Flowers' influence and Mike Sheldon's influence of culture and leadership. So with that being said, we can now go to public comment, but we've run so long, I am going to enforce a 3-minute rule for anyone that has comments. And I'm sorry, but you have to understand that not us, but staff has been working probably since 5:30 or 6 in the morning, and we want to be respectful of their time. So is there anyone from the public that would like to make a statement? Please keep it to 3 minutes or less.
Hello. Yes, I'm Rodney on Sago Unit, Rodney Woodville.
Do you want your name in the minutes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment about, I gave them a printout sheet on the Clorox healthcare hydrogen peroxide, along with the information with the MSDS, the material safety data sheet. And what I'm stating is that OSHA said, I mean, not OSHA, ADOS, Arizona Department of Occupational Safety and Health Administration said that, or State Hazardous Administration said that that it was out of their jurisdiction, and OSHA told me that if ADOS doesn't do what they're supposed to that, then I was to inform them. Here's the thing about that healthcare. Is that it says to that it may be a respiratory irritant, and if somebody is has respiratory tract irritations, and you're supposed to get them out to fresh air, and also that they're supposed to have adequate ventilation when they use that stuff, and there's not really adequate ventilation. There's just recirculatory here in the hospital. Now also with the same brand hydrogen peroxide, the wipe. They wipe surfaces that we tables that we eat on, and the MSDS sheet says that that it needs to be water rinsed where surfaces may come in contact with food. Now a lot of patients pick up food off the table and eat it, but when they use those wipes, they wipe down the tables and they don't water rinse. That's what I'm saying. That they said they're OSHA compliant, but that's not OSHA compliant. Also, but exposure limit to the hydrogen peroxide is 1 part per million. If you can smell it, it's already 40 parts per million because I work in the chemical industry. Anyway, so what I've done is I compiled about 8 documents, including the letter I got from ADOS that said that it was not in their jurisdiction. And I'm having it emailed to along with my complaint about it to OSHA. So just a heads up. Also, you have to have eyewash stations. There are no eyewash stations. The one in the med room is not readily accessible. Keep and breaking the lock. As a matter of fact, one of the locks in the other room, they were having trouble getting into it. It has to be readily accessible. And that's not readily accessible. They're probably going to go through the same thing they did with the Clorox Shelf Care chlorine spray. They had to get rid of it because they were not OSHA compliant. They couldn't keep eyewash stations up on the wall. The patients ripped them down. Anyhow, thank you. That's about all for that.
Thank you. Do we have any other public comments?
Hi, this is Timber Briscoe on Mojave.
Hi, Tim. Do you want your name in the minutes?
Most definitely. On the day you spoke about a patient and the Tech 4, on this day of the crash, about the crash, investigators never came to any of the person's peers to talk to them, and Ash closed the case. He sent it to Access. They denied it. So it's the fox watching the hen house still. This tech has pushed me out of the way after we argued and told me to move quite a while ago. I never filed a grievance because of retaliation, fears from the PNC, the PNUM, the same Tech 4, along with their little clique. If you're not in their clique, no, they try and run you off the unit. In the past, I've wrote multiple grievances on Tech before about his behavior. He continues to try and provoke me and a few of my other peers every day in different ways to set us off. On this day of the incident, there were other Tech 4 who restrained this other Tech 4, the one in question, never reported this to the only the RN who was also intervened. And now she's no longer here because she was bullied and intimidated by the PNUM on Mojave. The Tech 4 only messes with about four or five of us mainly. One of those peers is very badly developmentally disabled. He's constantly being bullied by the Tech 4. There's no treatment for him here. He's been over here over 15 years. He's only getting worse. About the guy with the search, they took his bar mitzvah picture. I don't see how that's excess or contraband and could hurt anybody, a picture. And let's see, OSHA and JCO are alert the hospital before they come. So then Ash gets their stuff in order and cleans up and makes everybody stay high and tight. But after that, then we just slack off back to the way it was, same old, same old. They need to have surprise inspections, not be told 2 weeks ahead of time. We're told to police our own peers and turn on them and punish them in case there is no blanketed rule. Infectious control issues. They say that we can't have hygiene in our room. Is hygiene what you clean your body with? Yes. Four of the seven toilets on our unit do not have seats on them, so you have to sit on the bowl itself. I don't feel that's very sanitary, and water gets all over your behind and you get all wet. The trash cans need to be cleaned out more with sanitizer because they just changed the bag. They never wash them out. It smells like sewage sometimes. The washing machine smells like human feces and or sewer. It needs to have some real bleach poured down in it to sterilize it properly. Our law library consists of two books. There's multiple staff here that I've talked to in the 7 years I've been here almost that have had felonies, been to prison, One of these contracted staff even tried to pick a fight with three of us, and security had to escort him off to the parking lot, and then he tore off in his car. Still have a patient, civil, who's on the civil side here, and he's been in the same room, the seclusion room, in tethers for over 8 years. Walking horse, you can't buy clothes out of there or certain.
Hey, Tim.
Yeah.
You're overtime, sorry.
Okay.
But thank you. Hope you're doing well.
Could you guys please visit me? And also the guy who had the search done would like to see you, and the guy who had the incident with the Tech 4.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have anyone else?
Hi, Laurie. It's Holly.
Hi, Holly.
Hi, I just wanted to, I waited till public session to discuss this. I have been so grateful to the treatment teams for clients who are on a couple of units, including Cottonwood, but also who've been waiting for who were waiting for the court system to come back to get into session and start hearing cases. After we had no PSRB for a year, and then the PSRB was disbanded for almost a year. I want to compliment the treatment teams. What I've seen happening in the past few months is treatment teams who are doing their very best to move people along as fast as it's safe, putting public safety and patient safety, of course, first. But trying to be much more creative and much more individualized in their approach than they ever could be with the PSRB, who would only hear patients on regular schedules. Judge Welty has been, and I've won some and lost some with Judge Welty, so he certainly doesn't rubber stamp what anybody asks him to do. He was a formidable U.S. attorney and is the presiding judge in Superior Court in Maricopa County. And he's a terrific lawyer, and that's all that we wanted. I have yet to leave one of his proceedings and not feel like, and Chuck and the other physicians on here it's finally we have a situation where we can leave, and even though we didn't get the best outcome that we thought we needed, we had no doubt that the patient wasn't worked up, the labs were there, the x-rays were there, the diagnostics were there, everybody did their best. We just didn't get the best outcome that we wanted, but we have no doubt that the system had integrity and thoroughness and that it was solid science that came to bear. So I want the administrators and CEO Sheldon in particular to know your clinical folks are responding in a way that I hoped would happen, and I'm so glad that now we have the judicial system involved, that the teams are behaving professionally, and they're really individualizing the approach to try to move forward folks in their levels and their phases and looking at ways to do that. And it's just been so rewarding to have months of this now after years of feeling like we were truly in a kangaroo court, and it's no longer that way. So I wanted to commend your treatment teams, all of them, Dr. Holmes, all of the physicians, but the psychologists who updated risk assessments very quickly in order to get the court insists on something that's very current, as they should. And so these teams have updated risk assessments, written mental health reports. They've turned things around in a month. I know it hasn't been easy, but they've done it. And perhaps most importantly, at least my clients have said to me, gosh, these guys are really working hard to get this stuff done and get it to the court. And it's so refreshing, and it's wonderful. So thank you. I wanted to thank you, and I hope you'll pass it on down through the CMO and others, because it's
It's been terrific. Thank you.
Thank you, Holly. Do we have anyone else from the public that would like to speak? We have new people joining. What's your impression, your thoughts? We have other folks that have joined.
Hi, Crystal Fox, and I worked at the state hospital for 2017. Anyhow, after all these years, it's always the same problems with contraband and all the same stuff. So, same thing with the laundry. And so, and again, I do have to say too that I love the hospital. It was my favorite place to work.
Hey, so, Crystal, before you continue, can I have the units do star 6 so we don't get echo, and then you can take it off if you want to speak? Okay,
so go ahead. The only kind of comments I had, and I also work at an IOC and I'm with DDD, and I 100% agree with Mr. Sheldon about the DDD members, and I went over to Desert Sage and started working that unit just because of the DDD members, that they should not be there. It's not helpful to them or to anyone. But the only comment really that I had, the couple of things is, I really didn't think it would be a good idea to count patient complaints. Like you were talking at the very beginning about, that one, staff member that you wanted to investigate. But I don't think it's a good idea. We kind of did that before. I can't remember if it was Adult Protective Services or somebody didn't like it that we were monitoring other patient complaints. They thought it was against their rights and that it might provide like a not a fair evaluation of like the patient complaint. The other one was, in the past, we didn't really move. And again, this kind of bothered me a little bit, that if there's a patient having a problem with a staff or a staff having a problem with the patient, that in the past, it was the patient that had to move, it was the staff that had to move, not the patient. Lori kind of answered my question, because we did a lot of administrative leaves in the past. I never got to go on one, but a lot of the people I knew did. I was glad to hear that they do still do administrative leave when they're investigating. But even after they did administrative leaves, a lot of the times the staff would go to another unit if there was a problem with that patient, because there's so many areas that staff can go to, and very few that the patients can go to. And like they were saying, with, I don't care how many times you try to move a patient, you never get all, they never got all their belongings. It was always a mess, trying to move people from where they had lived for a long time. But again, that was just a few little things. Again, I think, I felt bad for the people who can't get their B1s. I never heard of that. We used to have a bank. The B1s used to be easy. So I don't know. To me, I'm in IOC as well. So it seems like a patient's rights issue if they can't get their money the way, if it's their money, they should be able to get it. And then I was wondering, is there any reason that you can't get more vending machines? I mean, you're making money on them. Is there anybody there?
So, Crystal, during public forum, we're not allowed to respond. Oh. So we can take the input one way. We can discuss it later, but that's why.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, I was just curious about that, because again, it's a moneymaker, so get more vending machines and they can spend their money. So that was it. I appreciate it. I love the state hospital, like I said. I know it's a challenge. I know it's a challenge for the staff. And Hang in there. That's it.
Thank you, Crystal. Anyone else from the public?
This is Tim again. One last thing. Mike Sheldon said they move patients because of behavior or conflict with other peers. That's not true. There are about four or five of us that are on the secret shuffle program, and we were moved every 6 months. I got a new team every 3 months. I get a new provider still every 3 months. So there's no continuity of care with my providers. I still have the same psychiatrist for about 6 months now, but who knows when that's going to stop. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have anyone else that would like to speak? Well, thank you, guys. I think we'll call to adjourn. It's been a very productive meeting, and I thank all of you for volunteering your time. Motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 So we are adjourned. Thank you, guys. Be safe. Stay cool and out of the hurricane. Who would think that Arizona?
Thank you.
Would have a hurricane. It's crazy.
Wait, what did I miss, Lori? Do I need to take a look at the news?
Yes, it's hitting us in San Diego first, but there is a hurricane that's going to hit Arizona, first California, then Arizona. So
it's going to be and it's going to cause us to be strong still. I'm going to look. Yeah. Thank you, Lori.
Yeah. Okay. Take care, guys.
Bye.
Talk to you soon. Bye.